Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Reading is good.
Middays on the Score.
Sometimes it's even great. The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making the 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. Ben Lindbergh is on Twitter at Ben Lindbergh. He is the writer, podcaster for The Ringer, and the co-author of The MVP Machine. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Ben, thanks for joining us, and congratulations, and thank you for writing this. It is endlessly fascinating, and I think important.
Well, thank you so much for saying so. It's great to be here.
So Ben, I wonder what the lead up to writing this was with Travis Sawchuk. I know that you and you'd written the book. The only rule is it has to work, and it's your experiments to try and make an independent league team as crazy and weird and experimental as you could. This, though, follows real front offices, MLB front offices, and their search to do things that nobody else has thought of to do. What was the lead up, and what was your clue to go ahead and try and find the truth behind these practices?
I think it just seemed to both of us that this was the story of baseball today, that this was the thing that stood out, the thing that was different. We'd all been talking about Moneyball for 10, 15 years, and Moneyball, of course, is about going out and finding undervalued talent, you know, getting guys who are already good, but for whatever reason, the market just undervalues their contributions. And it just seemed to us that that was getting harder and harder to do because every team was evaluating players' past performance in a similar way. And at the same time, we were noticing a bunch of guys just completely altering the trajectory of their careers. You know, for me, it was Rich Hill, I think, and his comeback in 2015 that just opened my mind to the possibilities. And I think for Travis, it was Marlon Byrd and Justin Turner and some of the guys on the offensive side, J.D. Martinez, et cetera. And it just started to seem to us that, hey, there's a new story seemingly every week about someone who made some sort of data-driven change that changed his career. And that was a really exciting idea to us. So we concluded that the Moneyball era, at least as we understood it before, was over. And this was a new one where the competitive advantage wasn't so much about finding talent, but creating or enhancing talent.
And it's data, but it's not statistical data as we understand it as much as it is measurement data. You make the important point. Babe Ruth had launch angle.
Right.
Bob Feller had spin rate. Those things were making a difference in their performance. We just understand how and why now. And it's sort of the humanity of all of this. And for me, it really has forced a reconciliation as somebody who was very much toward the data side of things more than the human side. When you actually bring up David Eckstein, who was long kind of a whipping boy for those, Mr. Grit and Mr.
Right.
Tryhard and all that. But you know what? The point of this, what you're establishing, is it matters how hard somebody tries at being the best he or she can be.
Right. That's absolutely right. I think that's always been the case to a certain extent, but people who look at the game through the lens that we look at it, maybe we're a little slow to realize that or acknowledge that. And, you know, I think especially today when there's so much potential for players to improve by embracing this information, whether they're willing to and how hard they're willing to put it to use in practice, I think is a really important tool, you know, not a traditional scouting tool, but an important one nonetheless. And I think what you're hitting on there is absolutely true. There's been a convergence in this information and in these worlds where we used to talk about stats versus scouts. Well, now the information is virtually the same on both sides, right? I mean, we have this tracking technology that's telling us how players move and how their pitches fly and how their swings travel. I mean, this is scouting information, but it's now data and technology. And so you have the same kind of convergence going on with players and nerds who never played the game, you know, the jocks versus nerds kind of conversation from 15 years ago. That's ending too, because players are now into this information as much as anyone. They came up in this Moneyball era. They're receptive to stats. They've seen players use it to improve themselves and make a lot of of money. So, of course, they want whatever they can get to make themselves better.
Talking with Ben Lindbergh, he is the author of the book, The MVP Machine. It's changed the way I think about baseball. It's changed the way a lot of people have thought about it as well. You can follow him at The Ringer, of course, or at Ben Lindbergh on Twitter. I wonder, Ben, something that's got me thinking as I've read through this book is, if these tactics can make a $100 million player out of J.D. Martinez after he's cut from the Astros, a smart organization, there's this idea that there's so many more potential great MLB players if we follow some of these practices, if we learn even more using these cameras. It's made me think about potential expansion in the MLB differently because of just how many good players you could theoretically have. The bounds seemingly don't exist for this.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, there are still some natural limits and some things that are more difficult than others to improve. But I think that's a good point, that the talent pool is actually deeper, not just for the usual reasons, you know, the population size increasing and more countries playing baseball and all of that, but also we're just getting better at unlocking the talent that would have once been hidden within guys. And I think you're still seeing those kind of transformations at the major league level. You know, your Tommy La Stellas and Hunter Pence, who has resurrected his career by going to the same hitting coach that Justin Turner and Mookie Betts did. I mean, these kind of career transformations, you know, by veterans are still happening, but I think in the future they may be rarer because those transformations will happen when guys are really young, when guys are in amateur ball, when guys are in the minors. By the time they get to the majors, I think they'll have already learned a lot of these things that it used to take players years of trial and error and perhaps running into the right coach at the right time to actually implement. So I think that's what we're seeing in baseball with this great youth movement today, where so much of the talent is under 25 players. I don't think that's an accident. I think guys are getting coached and using this information more and more, even before they make their big league debuts.
I think the important point is made in the chapter, The Conduit, that it's a player just needs to hear it from the right person. Mm. And what we have now, instead of a player looking at reams of data set on his chair at his locker, I don't need any of that, I grew my feel, that now that you really nailed where the rubber meets the road, that it's when it comes from Brian Bannister, when it comes from a guy we had on the show recently, Sam Fuld, we're now blurring the line where the players themselves are growing up in this and say, hey, here's something that helped me. Talking about Justin Turner with Clay Bellinger in the batting cage, these moments of organic player-to-player or former player-to-player, it's not a guy in a suit. It's not what we imagine, these classical nerd archetypes here. That it's, we're breaking down walls, which sounds to me like, as it's naturally occurring, is accelerating, like you say, because these cameras are in the minor league parks and practice facilities, in the cages, in A-ball. It's now just something they grow up with and something more people increasingly are comfortable talking about.
Right, and there's this whole generation of players, maybe they just recently retired, but they had some interest in analytics and numbers, and maybe they would have gone into a front office career, but now they're in these hybrid conduit-type roles where they're just the communication, the link between the front office and the field staff, and they're comfortable in both of those worlds. The players trust them because they've walked in their shoes, they've worn a uniform, but they have this information so that they can speak fluent front office, as I think we say in the book. And this was something that Sam Miller and I kind of learned firsthand in our first book that you mentioned. We took over this independent league team, and we had all these ideas about, okay, we're going to get the team to do this and that and this strategy and that strategy. And we found, you know, half the time we were fighting about the messengers, us, because we hadn't been there before. We were the nerds coming in and saying, let's do this and do that, and why would they listen to us, right? So we really could have used someone in that role, and I think kind of, you know, butting our heads against that maybe clued me in even more to how important that is and how many teams are embracing that role today.
So, Ben, in spring training, Dan and I kind of followed along with a number of beat reporters trying to figure out exactly how many teams ended up buying an Edutronic and a Rap Soto and a Kinetrax and all that stuff. And it turns out everybody got one, so everybody's now found itself on the bleeding edge.
More than one.
More than one. Many investments. I wonder, though, if there's anything you heard from your interviews, in your reporting of this, in your writing of this. Are teams worried about something in this new kind of technology-driven revolution? Is there some sort of darkness in the cloud here?
Well, we talk about a couple things that are perhaps worrisome in the book, although not so much from the team perspective. But, you know, we talk about the privacy concerns. You have minor league players who are getting tracked, everything they do on the field, many things they do off the field. All this information is there, and it's somewhat protected. But in the majors, you know, there are explicit protections about what players have to do and what they don't have to do. And in the minors, not so much. So you can kind of, you know, compel players to yield this information. So that's sort of a concern from the player perspective. And obviously there's a concern from the league-wide sport perspective, because that's something I heard from a lot of people while working on the book. You know, we're making the players better, we're making the teams better. That doesn't mean we're making the sport better.
Yeah, the game's unwatchable. I mean, you can't
sit through a full MLB game, you know,
now.
They're breaking baseball, or at least the way that it has traditionally worked. And I think there's still a lot of great things about baseball, but if you don't like the three true outcomes style, all or nothing, homers and strikeouts type of play, that's what this movement is leading to more and more, because, you know, strikeouts are the optimal outcome for pitchers, home runs are the optimal outcome for hitters. They're both pursuing those things, and we're accelerating toward that future even more. So teams and players are doing things that benefit them, and it may not benefit baseball on the whole.
All right, let's talk about patient zero for a moment here. You and Travis are close to doing the impossible, and that is allowing me to empathize with Trevor Bauer.
If only briefly.
If only briefly. I think I do think that he may be a crazy person, but it's remarkable his role in this and his father's role, that it's Warren Bauer that showed the Edgertronic camera to Kyle Boddy of Driveline. It was Warren Bauer, the engineer and son of an engineer.
We have to crush a lot of Red Bull in this interview.
Who did this, and it's just astonishing to me the kind of mad genius it takes to make these things stick, to bring them to the mainstream.
Yeah, and, you know, I knew Bauer was into all of this stuff in a vague way before we started working on the book, but I didn't fully appreciate his role in instigating the movement. And, you know, our goal in the book was not really to glorify Bauer or make you like Bauer. You know, we're pretty upfront about all the reasons not to like him and his various Twitter transgressions. And, you know, if you can't get around that and think that you like him at the end of it, I think that's fine. Lots of people have told us that they don't like him after reading it. They like him less after reading it, but they understand the role that he played in this movement. And I just don't think that we could have written this book or, you know, accurately and comprehensively chronicled this player development revolution without talking about Bauer, because, you know, aside from his own flaws, which are numerous, I think he's really had an influence. And, you know, we talked to a lot of other players who have learned from him and looked at what he does, and obviously the technology that he introduced into the game is everywhere now. So I don't think we can deny his influence, even as we acknowledge that he is far from the perfect messenger.
You know what hit home with me, too, was the Germanness of it. The fact that here is the father who was an engineer, was the son of German immigrants, and the approach to the problem of work hard, identify the components of the problem, use technology to relentlessly fix the problem. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of the U.S. space program. That, like,
yeah,
right. Nothing happened
efficient.
Until they got right. They got von Braun. They had to actually hire the former Nazi rocket engineer to bring him over, so they could rigidly redesign their program.
Right, and it's, you know, it's not magic. I think that's what we talked about in the book, that, you know, picking up a pitch, throwing a pitch the right way, it's just physics. And, you know, that doesn't mean anyone can throw any pitch, but if you can identify the components of the pitch, how it's released, how it's spinning, how it's traveling, how it's moving, and you can see it with unprecedented detail, how it comes out of the hand and how it moves on the way to the plate, then you can recreate that. And it's not just this kind of arcane, you know, he mystically picked up this pitch in a bullpen session, or this teammate recommended it to that guy. That still happens, but this is physics. And once you reduce it down to that, maybe it removes some of the magic. I don't know if it does, but I think it's much more replicable than people believed.
Ben, I want to go a little theoretical with you if we can. Not like full effectively wild or anything, but maybe, you know, 75%. If I put you on the other side of your book for just a moment and said you were working for MLB and your task was to make baseball, like you said, the worries about this revolution is that it's making it somewhat unwatchable, strikeouts, home runs, and the like. But if your task was to make baseball less like this, but also stop people from hating the game while you change it, what would you do?
I don't think it would actually be that difficult. You know, I think we're in this mindset in baseball where every change that's proposed is regarded as radical and really isn't, because most of them have precedent at some point in baseball history. The other major sports tinker with their products much more than baseball does. I think if we don't want the home run strikeout centric game, you just have to deaden the ball a bit. You have to change the incentives that hitters have to try to hit the ball as hard as they can and get in the air. You can correspondingly shrink the strike zone a little bit so that the ball doesn't travel as far when you hit it, but you don't have to cover as much territory, you know, things like that, or other things that have been discussed, like moving the mound back or even just lowering the mound. I mean, all of these things have precedence in baseball history, and in the early years of the sport, they used to change these things every year because they were trying to find the mix that produced the most entertaining product, and, you know, that worked for a while with some changes here and there, and now if it's run off the rails a little bit, we have to counter what the players are doing. I think it's as simple as going back to that sort of, you know, changing this, changing that. I don't think it's that radical, but it's baseball, because so whenever you talk about changing anything, there is an outrage.
We are talking with Ben Lindbergh, the co-author of The MVP Machine, How Baseball's New Nonconformists Are Using Data to Build Better Players. Billy Martin, as you mentioned, talked about the sort of the absolute nature of talent. He said when a guy shows up, he's either a mule or he's a horse or he's a thoroughbred. And now we know that's not true. That mules can become horses, horses can become thoroughbreds. Where on that continuum is the biggest impact? Is it at the base level, like Connor was talking about with expansion, where you could get more viable, solid, above replacement level players? Or is it turning some almost players or some already solid players into stars? What's the bigger impact on the game?
Yeah, I think probably the former. I think, you know, there are fewer guys who just leap off the page at you and, you know, just stand out past the eye test, five-tool type guys. I think there are fewer of those. There are more guys who have some flaw, who are missing something that maybe can be given to them with this technology that identifies, hey, you throw this one pitch really well, throw that pitch more. Or, hey, we think you could create this pitch that you're missing. Or, hey, we think that your swing is suboptimal. We can make this tweak that will make you a little bit better. I think there are more guys who can benefit from that. But I think that was sort of the first wave, as you were seeing these sort of fringy guys who were willing to try something new.
Out of desperation,
right. Because they knew
right.
They were on their way out of the league if they didn't. Whereas now that worked so many times, I think you're seeing the star level player start to embrace that too. So, you know, Mookie Betts last year in his MVP year, you know, Bellinger this year. I mean, these are players who are already really good, who are still willing to tinker, which is a risk. When you're already a star in the majors and you're making money, that's a hard thing to do, to convince that type of player to change. But I think now it's an easier sell just because it's happened so often.
Just not to give away the book, but Ben, is there an injury prevention hope with some of this technology from teams? You know, you read Jeff Passan's The Arm and you start to realize that we may not know anything about keeping pitchers healthy, or maybe it's just a wing and a prayer. Is that a next frontier possible, or maybe is that the next book you got to write?
Yeah, I mean, we touch on it in this book, but I think there's more to be written and more to be learned there. It's true that since The Arm came out, Tommy John surgery rates have been down. You know, I don't know exactly what the cause of that is, but it could be related to some of the things that teams have been doing, where you can quantify the force applied to pitchers' joints and, you know, every step of the delivery, everything is motion tracked, and you can get a really well quantified sense of whether a guy is incurring extra stress, and then maybe you can recommend a change to minimize that a little bit. So I think there is something to be done there. I don't know that we're going to completely eradicate these career-altering or ending injuries, unfortunately, but there's more and more attention being paid to that side of things. You know, we talk in the book about sports science departments and high-performance departments that a lot of teams have adopted lately that are less about how to, you know, fix the player on the field or improve his performance, but just how to make him stronger, how to keep him healthier, how to make him better rested. So I think those things are helping. They're chipping away at the problem. I don't know that anyone has solved it yet, but that's definitely a book when someone does.
Well, this is a terrific book in and of itself.
Agreed.
And I couldn't recommend it more highly, and I appreciate how thorough, how carefully this is done. That's really making us rethink the way we watch the game, and certainly appreciate you being generous with your time
Thanks,
today.
Ben.
Thanks very much.
That is Ben Lindbergh, co-author of The MVP Machine. And I know it's late for Father's Day, but for graduates, get this book, read this book. You can't get enough of what it's explaining to you. And it's how much of it came from the idea of how far ahead golf was, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Data. The golf would just why aren't other sports? Why didn't other sports recognize what golf could do with tracking data and how eager all golfers were, even recreational golfers? There wasn't a pushback. I don't need it. I know my club head speed. I know how it comes up. Why is it that sport people ate it up?
Do you know why? Because golfers are terrible. Like
it's hard,
every day,
because
it's
right?
so hard. No, seriously. Yeah. If you look at some of the common denominators throughout the baseball players that have taken to these technologies to improve themselves, a lot of them are so close to bottoming out or have just been cut or got their ass removed from a team because they couldn't hit. Then you start going, okay, well, listen, the steroid testing is up in baseball and I'm not good and that's not an avenue for me anymore. I wonder what Bauer's up to with this crazy weird camera thing. Maybe I'll give that a shot.
Or where did Justin Turner come from and why does a guy who could not hit home runs before all of a sudden is carrying the ball through the air 420 feet?
To me, it seems like desperation for good reason seems to be a big factor in the MVP machine, the writing of it, and front offices using the technologies they've invested in.
This segment brought to you by True Green. Ready for a mosquito-free summer, Chicago? Call True Green. They'll eliminate biting mosquitoes in your yard within 24 hours of application, guaranteed. Call 1-866-TRUE-GREEN or visit truegreen.com/mosquito-free-summer. Additional restrictions may apply. See truegreen.com for details. Speaking of golf, when we come back, we're going to give away a round of golf for two at the top-rated Bog Golf Club.
We will also do something completely different than talking with Ben Lindbergh. We've got a case of the stupids in St. Louis.
Yes.
And you will hear it. Oh, Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
And the Blues at the bench are realizing that they are going to be champions. 10 seconds to go. The longest wait for a first title any team in this league has had. For the first time in their history, the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions.
Partying. The bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Connor, give me a single-digit number, please.
One single-digit number? Oh, I don't know. Let's go with 4.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Caller 4 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, wins a round of golf for two at the top-rated Bog Golf Club, located in Saukville, Wisconsin. The Bog is one of Arnold Palmer's top 5 courses in the country. Visit golfthebog.com.
So, Brett Hull, of course, former Blues and former loved and beloved and hated player. His skate was in the crease, by the way. Jay's pointed that out on Twitter many times, and I appreciate him doing that. You remember when Alex Ovechkin won the Cup last year?
Oh, yes, I do.
Listeners of this show will remember that for about 2 weeks or so, we would just kind of do daily check-ins with Jay to see if Alex Ovechkin was still drunk. And every time we checked in, yes, Alex was indeed still drunk. Brett Hull is trying to supplant Alex Ovechkin after the Blues, not his team now, but his former team, won the Stanley Cup for the first time in franchise history. He has been hammered for a real good run here, and he should be. I mean, that's the job of ambassadors and everybody. After you win a title like this, you can get yourself all crazy and enjoy the good times. But Brett's also been on tape being as celebratory as he has been. A lot of people saw him during the anthem and celebrating while he was on the ice and being a little bit off kilter there. There's more. There's another incident. This is more drunk Brett Hull.
You can say let's go Blues all you want, but you know what? We went! We went Blues! We don't have to go anymore because we already did. These got a Stanley Cup for this city. There is nothing more they have to do. So instead of saying, let's go Blues, we're going to say, we went Blues. We went Blues.
He's
Matt Foley.
Drunken idiot.
Well, you know what? In the Hull family, if you're going to get drunk and say stuff, at least he didn't compliment Hitler. Right? I mean, if he's just going to be a goof and come up with slogans that are not going to ever be repeated, we went blues! That's fine, but at least he stopped short of complimenting Hitler.
I suppose you're right. I like to think of a drunken Brett Hull before the championship parade where he's making his speech, running things by his team, you know, other phrases he came up with. That we went blue. No, you know what, Brett? Don't go with that. That's not good. You can't
We're
say that.
We're going to say we went blue.
No.
All right. Well, you know, let him say that because the other things were pretty bad.
No,
so let's send him out there and let him think that we went blues. It's going to work.
Well, and he has two actual Stanley Cup titles.
Yeah.
I could understand if he was just vicariously, this was his opportunity to experience the closest thing he's ever had to being part of a championship because he's part of the Blues family.
But right.
He actually won one with the Stars with the disputed goal with his toe in the crease.
Yeah, toe in the crease.
And he also won one completely legitimately as the top playoff performer for the Red Wings.
Yeah, I mean, he's got rings, but why would you not want a party? You know, I mean, it's if you're close to the celebration, you get yourself as ingrained as you can.
I guess.
Two championship parades going on, by the way. The Raptors are having theirs, and we just kind of been walking in on Rockford's own Fred Van Vliet. It takes a lot. It takes a lot of stones to do this and pull it off. But you've noticed as the Raptors are driving around in the buses, the double-decker buses, and celebrating with all the Raptors fans and stuff that are out there in Toronto, Fred Van Vliet is wearing a Fred Van Vliet T-shirt.
Not a Josh Bellamy?
No. No, he couldn't get one.
Okay.
No, it's Van Vliet on the T-shirt, and it takes a lot of moxie to wear your own damn T-shirt. But I suppose if the day to do it is on your own damn championship parade where you sunk a bunch of shots and Hubie Brown thought you should be the finals MVP, damn it.
That was great. And it's clear, a lot of people, everybody on Twitter realized that Hubie must have thought it was game MVP and not series MVP.
Fred right? Van Vliet hit big shots, man.
I know, I love the guy.
Van Vliet was huge.
Yeah, Hubie got that one wrong. Several people are suggesting that it works if Brett Hull uses we went blues. We went whatever is necessary today.
Or you could do the Arrested Development version of this. We blew ourselves. That would work somewhat for you.
You can't say that.
You can't? We blues. Blues. We blues? All right. Well, dump it if we can't do it.
I don't think...
Spoiler alert. You can't.
All right.
Yes, you can't. Add that to the list.
Blues. All right.
Right. But you didn't say... It's how it sounds to the ear.
Huh.
It's not a cryptic crossword clue.
There's a little word called context.
That's kind of matters. To make, I guess.
Right. There are certain things you can
say. Well, think Arrested Development then if you're going to go for this.
In ways. Come on, man. Hey, we've got Cubs tickets to give away next. And before he's gone, I have to praise a member of the White Sox for moving to the top of a list that I carry in the back of my head.
What do you mean before he's gone?
Because he's probably going to be gone because he's bad.
Oh, okay. I thought we were going to lose somebody.
No, he's going to be, he'll just be somewhere else plying his trade. He's a journeyman player. I just have to celebrate him for a very specific reason.
We will do that. We'll have Lawrence Holmes in transition in just a few. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
And they are the champions. Glory, Gloria. 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 I think I got your number. Gloria!
You do you, Brett Hull. Woo. Give me another single-digit number, please.
7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
New streak going here. Caller 7 to the contest line, 312-591-6700. Wins a pair of tickets to see the Cubs versus Atlanta at Wrigley Field on Wednesday, June 25th. Courtesy of 670 The Score, radio home of Cubs baseball. You listen to this show, you win stuff. Also, before he's elsewhere,
what?
Odisramer Despaigne.
Ah.
Odisramer Despaigne, I think, is now at my top of mellifluous Cuban baseball names.
Oh. It's a lovely name.
It is. It's one of the things that Cuban baseball has done for us. It's given us, he has supplanted the man previously at the top of that totem pole, Unieski Betancourt.
Ooh, that is a
good one. Isn't that a good one?
Yeah, Unieski Betancourt.
Unieski Betancourt is now second to Odisramer Despagne. And the Cuban names with all of the letter Y, Uriel and Uniel and Unieski and Yoan. And apparently it had to do with certain generations trying to have names that were more Russian, more like Yuri.
Yeah.
And they come from Yuri, and it comes from the political leanings of Cuba, where people were paying homage to Russians by creating names that started with Y.
Yeah, well, you're right. Odrisimar Despagne probably will not be with the White Sox all that long, so celebrate them while we can.
And we should mention, people are pointing out from the 815 that Fred Van Vliet has a store in Rockford where he sells his Van Vliet clothing.
We need Van Vliet shirts.
So there are lots of Rockfordians wearing his apparel throughout Rockford. Yeah, we got to get some shirts, man.
Does he sell sheets? Because we're looking into some Van Vliet sheets.
Well, I've got a conflict there.
Oh, I'm just saying, I'm open to putting some Van Vliet sheets on the bed.
Okay, see, I mean,
if I've got to do that.
I am not, because I am already under contract.
Well, maybe he could just brand. Maybe it's like a certain special edition of sheet.
If Brooklinen could sell the Van Vliet, then
it's like a Van Vliet sheet. It's like an extra level up.
Yeah, we should get him on. We should talk to Fred about everything that's going on, what he's doing over the summer with the camps that he runs in Rockford and all that stuff.
Probably busy now, but I'm sure we can get him on the next couple of days.
Well, he's on a double-decker bus right now, as far as we know. He's
literally and figuratively, yes.
That thing's going on. We've got Lawrence Holmes coming up. We're going to say hey to him next on The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.